Welcome back to Coach's Corner with Jam Consulting. Hi, I'm George Amidon along with Greg Heffington, and we're your hosts. Hef, thanks for coming back again.
Yeah, my pleasure, George. Thanks for having me.
Our guest today again is Dr. David Morrison of Morrison Associates. Dr. Morrison specializes in organizational psychiatry and is a leader in the field of crisis management. David, thanks for coming back again as well.
Delighted to be with you all.
Well, as we've talked about in some of the prior podcasts, you know, with what's happening today in this current environment, we've all experienced disruption, whether it's to the lives of our clients, peers, and associates, as well as ourselves and our families. And what we'd like to do is shed some light on the three key factors that are evident today. Those three factors are a loss of routine, followed by a need to act, both of which we've covered in prior podcasts. And finally, this idea of loss of connection, and see if there's some simple ideas, recommendations, or exercises that our listeners can do to help themselves so that they can more easily help others. So, Hef, let's dig into this final factor, this idea on need to connect.
You know, thanks, George. And again, thank you, Dr. Morrison, for joining us. You know, Dave, and this reminds me of other times of international crisis. The example I would use was 9/11. How often have you heard people voice concerns about this idea of separation from family, friends, and social networks?
Oh, it's very common, Greg. I think it may be the most traumatic aspect in terms of the psychological harm or the psychological threat of this current crisis. I've recently, in our first podcast, we talked about a psychiatrist describing a double pandemic and the virus and anxiety. He also went on, and I agree with him, that social distancing is the wrong phrase, or perhaps the wrong, induces or produces the wrong mindset. It's physical distancing, which creates the threat or the problem of social distancing, of social isolation and social hunger. So pretty much every person I talk to has a family member that they can't be with, that they're concerned about, that they have to drive by and wave at through the window, or it's halfway around the world and they can't travel and be with them, and they're concerned because they're sick or someone in the neighborhood's sick or something's going on where that virus is like right there on the doorstep. The second is, I think, obviously, many of us, I do, I like my coworkers and I like my clients. I like to be with them. I wish the three of us were together in person. So, yeah, I think it's probably universal and probably one of the most harmful. I don't want to say toxic because we're finding ways to deal with it, but one of the more harmful aspects of the shelter in place and bending the curve responses we have to do for the pandemic.
Well, David, what happens when we become disconnected?
Well, there's quite a lot of things that happen. Now, for some people, there's a wide range of people. For some people, they're actually more comfortable with distance. They don't like eye contact. They don't like physical touch. There's some thinking that that's part of the agony or the challenge for people who are autistic. But for, in general, human beings are comforted by human touch and by physical presence. And what happens physiologically is our blood pressure drops. We know there is data that if you hold a person's hand when they're in a coma and their brain is essentially dormant, their vital signs improve. Their heart becomes more regular, their breathing becomes deeper, more relaxed, and all the signs that they're less stressed happens when you hold someone's hand. It's also critically important with newborns, the physical contact. It doesn't have to be just the mother, but the father too, the skin-to-skin contact. More and more we understand and learn about that, it's critical, and particularly for newborns, because they're at a point where they're setting kind of their thermostat, their regulatory stress responses are being set in those first 3 months to 3 years of age. And you never get a chance to go back and reset them. We know that in humans and we know that in animals. And of course, then there's the interpersonal. Are you there and responsive to my emotional needs? Am I there and responsive to your emotional needs? And we can do a lot more of that, as I've always said, as I know your team has always emphasized, when you're there in the room and you can see the emotional responses and gauge the body language and provide a reassuring comment or ask a question to engage with somebody who may be distracted or mind is wandering, or provide a joke, or when people are too serious, or to redirect the group when the group is too fractured and lacking focus. So from our very most basic human needs, we need that contact to do well and to respond to stress. And then for getting the work done in the workplace, it's very important, I believe, to have that social contact and to be together. I know a lot of people, and I imagine you guys are hearing this too, are already talking about the hunger and the missing of being at conferences or being at the client and being with them. So it's subjective, but it's also very real to need to be connected.
Well, writing stuff down here, because lots of notes to be taken. So, you know, you've described now the difference between physical distancing versus social distancing. And I, you know, that's been one of my, you know, mantras as well from the get-go on this thing, is it's really not about social distancing. We need social connection more than, maybe more than ever. And yet, you know, we're forced into this situation where we just can't. I mean, I'm thinking about myself, you know, running into, you know, a friend at the grocery store the other day, and, you know, there's a desire to reach out and, you know, shake their hand at the very least, but give them a hug if you could, but you can't. So you're sort of left with this feeling of disconnect while you're standing right in front of them. It's an incredible feeling, and it creates for me anyway, it creates this real anxiety around, you know, do they feel like I care enough? Do they feel like I'm here for them when I can't, you know, reach out and touch them, hug them, can't do those things? How do we bridge that gap? Is there a way to bridge that gap?
Well, one of my clients I'm working with is asking for regular conversations with their people because they sense that this is beginning to pay and will continue the employees will pay a psychological price for this. And their current question that they want to discuss today is, when we return to normal, will it really be normal? Will I be normal? And from what we know from psychological trauma, not just PTSD, but more minor psychological trauma, it resets our thermostat. It resets our stress responses. As adults, you know, it goes back to normal, but something is profound and in a way covering so many different aspects of our daily lives, not just our work lives and not just our personal lives, that it will likely be for the rest of our lives, and we'll have cues that will bring us back to this period in our minds, even though we'll be past it. And that's part of being human and part of perhaps participating in the human history and others who have been through this before, other periods of time. To your point, and that's a very vivid picture that you describe, and your question about the person in the supermarket, I know exactly what you're talking about. That hurts me as you describe it. I have a neighbor whose wife was ill and had cancer, but seemed like she was going to pull through it. She was not 100%, but up and about and laughing and joking last summer. And then it returned fairly quickly and alarmed all of us around the holidays. And by, I think it was the first week of February, she's gone. She died. And for a variety of reasons, I wasn't able to get to the memorial. I had a national conference. Anyway, I couldn't get to her memorial. And in the interim, this COVID thing came along. So I had an experience just like you described, where I ran into the husband and the daughter, and I can't go over and hug them. And to some extent, they've had the memorial before COVID. They were with family and friends, and they've had those times. It's not really that much for them. It's for me to sort of provide that hug and to feel that physical connection. But I was thinking, as you're describing, we're going to probably at some point have a huge cathartic cry when we finally get a chance to shake hands and to hug those we love again. It's not that we're bad. It's just the reality of what we have to deal with now. I do think there is some ways, and I've been talking about this with the municipal groups I work with and the professional service firms. I do think there is a way to not make it worse at the grocery store or as you're walking your dog or you're exercising in the park, whatever it might be. I do think it's legitimate to stop, to look somebody in the eye, and even with a mask on, you know, to smile. There's some studies that say the best way to tell what a natural smile is by looking at the eyes, not by looking at the mouth. And if you have a genuine smile and look them in the eye and say, how are you? Don't exhaust yourself, I don't think, and do it with every single stranger. But if it's a friend, and then stop and say, how are you? Now, they may be at a state of arousal or worry where they may not be able to reciprocate. But I do think that's going to be part of how we go forward and handle these things, Greg. And in particular, you know, as it relates to all the other things coming in, social media and other things like that.
David, it's George, and it's interesting what you just mentioned. And, you know, recently we were out walking and in an area, and when you pass people, it's some people won't even make eye contact. And yeah. I want to relate this back to the comment that you made earlier. It's this idea about, you know, with fear, having the right level of it. And I think with, you know, social media today, whether it's, you know, media in general, some of the information that we see is so concerning that I think it increases the fear that many people have and paralyzes them. So from your standpoint, I guess, how do you see social media in general making either helping with that connection or hurting it?
Well, you know, it's like power, right? Sometimes we use our power, our interpersonal power or our formal power and authority in ways that help, and other times we can unfortunately use it in ways that hurt. So I don't really know. I have my own bias against social media for a variety of ways, as well as technology, but I look at my college-age sons, and that's their world. I can't stop it. It's part of where they're living. So the pragmatic side is sort of the dream, the idealized use of the internet and social media, which is to connect with friends and to learn information that might take, you know, a special request from a special library to get critical information. Now we get it almost instantly. We have some of the best thinkers, some of the best laboratories, some of the best data readily available quickly worldwide to tackle this, which they didn't have with the Spanish flu. So that part is really pretty cool. But obviously, tribalism, polarizing, there's a concept out of the RAND Corporation called truth decay. And it's something I emphasize with the medical students lately, and then I've emphasized for the last year and a half, 2 years, with the Kellogg students I work with, the MBA students, which is you're an expert, and if you're quiet on social media, That means that either you don't care, or you agree with wrong things that are out there. So you, as an expert, have a responsibility to enter in the dialogue on social media and support and emphasize good science and good data. There's ideological things that we can debate about and we can have opinions about, but what the RAND Corporation points out is, and it ties to the idea of connecting today, their topic today, is it undermines trust when there's too much false information and people are using false information or junk science to ridicule or humiliate people and reinforce tribalism. So it's a challenging time, and it's important for the experts and those with expertise to be humble, but it's going to be critical, I think, for us to go forward together using the best data, the best science. It ties back to that issue of judgment that we talked about in the previous thing. On the nice side of connecting, though, too, you've seen things where people come out and they share ideas in terms of how to stay connected, singing on the balconies in Italy, playing music together. Somebody had a bingo game that they were doing in their multifamily home apartment building. Those exercising together, those kind of things look like they can continue to keep the social bonds and the sense of connection, and they've been leveraged and magnified by social media.
Well, thanks, Dave, and that helps. And actually, you kind of answered the question that I was going to ask next, which was really, are there things that we can be doing to increase that connection? And in some of the examples that you shared obviously address that. You know, as you think about this, this idea of needing to connect, obviously, I guess it would be fair to say that it impacts everybody, whether it's, you know, our clients, whether it's, you know, our associates, whether it's ourselves, but it's something that's universal across everybody that need to connect. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's, as I was talking about with the first question that Greg asked, this is going to be something that's not limited to one continent or one industry, one social class, one age, one gender, one ethnicity. This is all of us together. So we will share this, and being sensitive to it, seeing the human being and the hurt and the need and or the solutions will be a very important part of filling in that need to connect and enduring. It's a cliche now, but the association of fear and the sense that threat for many of us goes back to 9/11 or a major storm or tornado or blizzard or something that hits your hometown. Those are one-time events. They're sort of there and then they're gone. This is more of an endurance test. How do we endure? It's for all of us. And ideally, it can be a point of connection and shared understanding.
Well, thank you, Dr. Morrison. David, as I hear this, and I keep thinking to myself, you know, sort of the takeaways in all of this are really, really interesting. I mean, first of all, that, you know, I mean, we go back at it, and the fact of the matter is that generally speaking, there's a lot of comfort had in physical touch. And so while we can't necessarily be in the game of physical touch outside of our immediate family and or those that we're sort of sequestered with here, it's important to at least get that. I can also think to myself, you know, I've got a dog, and you talk about, unconditional hangout, you know, there's an opportunity to actually get some physical touch, even though it may not be, you know, with another human being. I think it's valuable. I mean, I know I can find comfort when I sit down with Lulu and we just sit on the floor and, you know, I just rub her. It's just, you know, scratch her belly. And she just loves it. And it's satisfying to me. It provides some comfort. We got to really be, you know, think about the emotional input. And again, we're going to go back to this idea of, you know, set it in the first round of this idea of be thoughtful about your thinking. Don't make it worse. When you see somebody, when you engage with somebody, you know, pause, smile, make eye contact, you know, ask the question, how are you doing? And when it comes to social media, it's ideally use it to connect with friends and family. Use it for immediate information. But in there is also a challenge, you know, in that it can be polarizing, alarming. This idea of tribalism, that's a really interesting. And the fact that, you know, a lot of misinformation undermines trust by propagating or promoting misinformation. I think that's really interesting. And again, I go back to this idea, be thoughtful about your thinking. My takeaways are really kind of one, limit input, right? Especially from social media. I think that's one of those things that sort of lives out there. Question the source of social media. And then by far and away, maybe the most valuable takeaway from today's conversation is this idea of, you know, talk to others, use video conferencing, use the phone, get on the phone, just get on the phone and talk. I know that even yesterday, you know, I had to reschedule a couple of appointments because I know that there's just no way that they're going to be ready in another week or so to be taking guests in whatever is going on. No personal face-to-face meetings. So in the process of rescheduling, these were individuals that I had in the past used text messaging. And I sent the text saying, let's talk about it. And so the next thing you know, you end up on the phone with somebody, and the comfort that's provided just in hearing the voice versus texting is incredible to me yesterday. I mean, it just settled in on me so hard. And I thought to myself, okay, this is the game. The game is really connect verbally, get on the phone, see somebody face to face. Those are going to be the things that are going to make a difference in persevering and enduring, as you call it. This is an endurance race, enduring this time that we've got. All that makes sense, or did I miss something in there?
Oh no, Greg, that's a nice synthesis. And as you do, you provoke more thoughts in me, and I want to underscore two of them. One is that response and that pull to be with your dog Lulu is very healing. There's been some silly jokes flying around social media like this is some kind of creation by dogs to get human beings to be home with them more, or little children, right, to be have their parents to be home with them more. But those stress hormones and those anti-stress hormones that are released with human touch and contact for infants are also released. One of them is called oxytocin, and they're also released when we pet our animals. And I love it. Some of these things you see flying around of a dog that puts his nose in somebody's lap on a conference call, or a cat who walks across the computer screen. They're picking up on the opportunity to be loved and touched. One person we had on the phone was funny. As she got more distressed, her dog got more distressed. That's just classic emotional connection. And as the dog soothed her, she got more soothed. And then, of course, we were all there together to sort of support her. Another client of mine was running a meeting, and he was just talking about the pressure and the tension. And he said out of nowhere, he was driving to his office, and he saw a puppy and he burst into tears. I think that's kind of what we're all dealing with. And that's sort of that cathartic cry I talk about. We're starving a little bit for that connection, as well as that sense of normalcy and hope. And it'll be there, it'll come back. But just to reinforce what you're saying, that it really is healthy and productive to be with your pets right now. And Greg, one last thing. The last thing that I want to share with you is that need to be connected that you're feeling, that I'm feeling. Our clients are feeling that too. And it really makes a difference when we step out and make an effort. And the more personal it is, the more human touch it is. So a voicemail or a phone call, as you described, it's extremely powerful. I think it's also unique to who you are in Jan Consulting. It's about the person. You've stood out over decades now as providing input and perspective about the human being as it relates to financial advisory services or professional services. That if you can think about the human being and if you can take that in mind, you're going to be more responsive to your clients. And that's an expertise that JAM has. And I think it's a need, a very deep need in all of us, but in particularly our clients right now. So I look forward to learning more about how and what you're all doing with your clients.
Well, again, David, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate your insights and the valuable information that you've shared with us. And for those of you who are listening today, thank you for taking the time out of your calendar and your day to sort of re-up on some thoughts here and hopefully provide some insights into what these challenges really are and some takeaways in terms of helping you address them. If you'd like to hear more about the other factors, the need to act and, you know, the need for routine, listen to the other podcasts. And if you'd like more information or just need to talk, reach out to us at JAM Consulting Group.